We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's got talk is development. It's market, yeah. Product market fit. It's actually product research. It's market. Yeah.
But I think that at the heart of it's talking to people. That's how you get to customers. That's how you get to sales. You have to talk to people. People are so in their shell that it's like you have to get out of your comfort zone. You have to if you're going to do a startup. So otherwise, you're going to keep guessing. You're going to keep throwing stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks. And guess what? Throwing stuff at the wall and tech and hoping it sticks costs a lot of money.
Is a lot of time and money wasted for sure.
It's the Bumble growth hack, right?
Yeah.
Bumble, what they did was like, hey, we'll go to these sororities, sponsor the event, tell all the frats to download it. And so as the guys show up, they have to have the Bumble. And then what happens is, once they graduate from University of Michigan or Rutgers or wherever, they then go move to San Francisco or New York, and like they're talking about Bumble. So like that's a way you can use events to like scale up like a software side. Like there's all different ways to slice it. But I'd say like do some events, make sure you have the right agendas and things that are filling up the room, and then get creative on like how do you drive value to the room and how do you get value from the room, you know, and creating that for everybody.
That's super interesting because we're at my day job, like, wow.
Yeah.
A lot of our clients love events. My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Jason Malky, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. You were referred to me by our good friend, Sean Gold.
The man, the legend.
He was episode 100 of this podcast. He fought hard to be episode 100.
The Sean move. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, because we're talking, he's like, well, what episode is this going to be? And I said, I don't know, maybe like 97, 98. He's like, Jar, I have to be 100.
The reputation thing.
I know. You are founder and CEO of Startup Boost and Superwarm.ai, which of course, can't wait to talk about all this AI shenanigans going on. And so it's always cool to kind of meet folks in the startup ecosystem. I'm a big fan. You know, the show is called The Entrepreneur Ethos. So of course I love entrepreneurs. But before we dig into all that fun stuff, as I always like to say, my only question, since I'm lazy engineer type person, tell us how you got to do what you're doing today.
Absolutely. So it's been a journey, to say the least. So I'll kind of give you the genesis story. I'm going to go all the way back to, honestly, college slash like my childhood almost, because it all correlates. So growing up, both my parents were entrepreneurs, you know, owned small businesses. Prior to that, my father used to do manufacturing with my mother, and then they eventually went to wholesale, then retail. You know, growing up, either I was in the factory or a little later in life in the store at the register. And, you know, knew early on, like, I'm just going to have my own business. But, you know, then I think, I'm 36 now. So I was 18. I go to college, right? This is probably 2006. I want to say it's my freshman year, right? And there was my brother actually was working on a startup, a tech startup. It was kind of like a YouTube, but with like an annual award show. So it's supposed to attract like higher quality creators was kind of his concept because he had a film background. That ended up kind of like, you know, fizzing out. But when I saw that, like he had, you know, videos being played and like, you know, I was like, whoa, somebody like, I could just create a business on the computer like that. Like my brain like exploded. It was like, whoa. Yeah. So for me, I was like, all right, this is cool. I don't have to sit behind a register, break boxes or do any of that stuff. And I can still like own a business. So while I was at college, I joined an entrepreneurship club. And while I was trying to build an entrepreneurship club at my school. And I was, you know, for me, I was like, let me ask around like other entrepreneurship clubs in the New York City area and try to get some like insights on how to do it before I kind of jump into it. So I connected to this guy who was running the NYU entrepreneurship club. And he's like, hey, I have this group on the part of NYC Startup Mixers. I believe he was like an intern there at the time. And he had some older gentleman who like was kind of our boss there. So I came in, we started doing NYC Startup Mixers, you know, that was the name of it. And, you know, my early thought was, you know, I'm 18, 19, whatever the exact age was at the time, you know, my network's my net worth, let me meet people. So ended up, you know, going to all these mixers and I got exposed to this entire world of like startups. And at that point, like San Francisco was definitely the leader and like New York was just starting to come on. And it was awesome. I got to meet like founders, investors, like it was the coolest thing in the world to me. So like at one point, like I remember literally I'd like work at the store and then hop on the bus from Jersey and like take the bus to New York and like just go to these events. And even if we weren't doing events, I'd like find free events on Eventbrite and just like go and like understand like what's going on in the ecosystem. So that was kind of like the early start and how like I got into startups. And then what ended up happening was the gentleman who ran NYC Startup Mixers, he ended up moving, I think, to Florida. And he gave me and the kid from NYU like his like list. He's like, hey, like, go for it. Like, you know, whatever you guys want to do with this. And so we did it for a couple of years together. Maybe it was like a year or so. And we ended up joining a co-working space in Midtown Manhattan as like their events team. And it was actually interesting because like we were doing more one-off events at first. And then fast forward, you know, at the co-working space, we do like 5-6 events a week. And we got to do like tons of different varieties, like hackathons, meetups, you know, panels, pitch events. Like we literally did it all. So that was a cool experience. After a while, I was like, all right, kind of just want to do my own thing again. So I ended up leaving there and starting my own group, which was Startup Boost. And so now Startup Boost has been around for over a decade. But the first couple of years, honestly, it was just like meetups. Like I didn't really have a great business plan. Like my business model was sponsorships, which honestly is not the best business model. It's a pain in the butt. Yeah, it's not worth the squeeze. And so over the years, though, what I found just meeting literally thousands of investors and founders was that in that 0-1 phase, you know, called pre-seed to Series A, all these founders have a uniform set of needs. They need a pitch deck. They need lead generation. They need, you know, paid acquisition. They need to, you know, do some business development. So instead of outsourcing and chasing down sponsors for those solutions, I said, why not start consulting? So slowly but surely, I was doing it 1-1. And it got to a certain point where I essentially was like, hey, I need help because like we're making money and I need to like bring on more people. But I will say like on that journey to go full time on Startup Boost 100%, there were a few like stints where I like worked at a startup during the day and hustled, you know, Startup Boost at night just to make sure I could like, you know, keep the lights on and, you know, probably live with my parents a little longer than I should have at some point. But, you know, it's necessary. You know what I mean? You got to do what you got to do. You got to hustle. And for me, it's, I worked at some startups and I'll be honest with you, it was one of those things where I'd stare at the clock and it's like, I could just one, like I'd be like counting the seconds on the clock. It was just, it was different. I had a taste of, I had a taste of owning my own business.
Yep.
And it was the funniest thing, actually. I'll tell you a quick story on it. I remember I was sitting at the office. I was a sales development rep. Yeah, I was an SDR at the startup. They're a cool startup. They've gone on to raise like $100 million plus. They're rolling. But I was on the early sales team. And I'll be honest with you, I remember, like I told them I was still doing Startup Boost on like the side. Mm-hmm. I remember I told myself, because I'd been working there a couple months. I didn't love it. It was like a stressful thing for me. I remember it was the time around where I tore my ACL also. So like I was using the crutches, like going to work. Like it just sucked. I was coming from Jersey. It wasn't fun. So, or not, no, I think I was still on crutches. Yeah, it sucked. But the point was like, I just had seen the difference between working for a business and owning one. And I just was, I got bit. I had like the bug and I was like, I just, mm-hmm. I got to figure this out. And it was so funny. I remember I was like, I met someone at one of my events. I said to myself, it was like a deck design project, like $1,000, $1,500. And I was like, if I sell this, I'm like, it is a sign. Like I'm going back all in and like, I'll roll with the punches. Like I literally told myself that. I remember like the next day I got email guys like, hey, let's move forward. And I was like, all right. Like I tested things and like, I got the answer I was looking for. And it's like, just take that leap of faith. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And, yeah, man. Never haven't looked back. I'm like, look, man, there's, especially early on when you create a business, there's, you know, peaks and valleys. So even as we start to like get momentum and like I started making some money, there's also the valley. So like I remember even times where I was like, damn, man, should I just like though, and this is like even like a couple years into it, right? When I was going full time, I was like, should I just go back to getting a job? Like, what, you know, now I'm getting to like my mid 20s. I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, is it make sense or not? So, you know, there's a lot of that you need to like combat in your mind, to be quite honest, to get to a certain point to where you make that breakthrough. I always think of, you've probably seen the meme where like there's someone like digging, there's like two guys digging, and like there's a wall of diamonds behind the dirt. They keep going. One guy walks away. I remember like always thinking that. I used to always think about that image. I'm like, they're right there. Just keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And you like, never know if it's around the corner or not. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And like fast forward to today, we're like an 8-person team. Like, thankfully, we do really well as an agency. Like, you know, I'm hiring people. Like, it's growing. Now, like a sustainable business, I figured out, you know, focus on recurring revenue. Because my problem was early on, though, I guess this is a bit tidbit for people, trying to get recurring revenue, even if you're an agency, right? I still do one-off revenue, to be clear. It's still a percentage of my business. But I focus a lot of my effort on getting retainers going because it creates reliability, which mitigates the issue I had early with the peaks and valleys to an extent. I'm not saying it's a silver bullet, but I know, okay, on the first of every month, it's like I'm collecting rent on a building. I know I'm going to get hit with a chunk of cash, covers my overhead, and hopefully I eat a little something on top, if not, I have a great month on top. So that was like a big shift for me that creates sustainability for me to go like full speed on the agency. And so today we do both. Like we do events. Like this week, we're going to announce probably two or three events for the upcoming month or two. And we do like mixers, panels, pitch events, you know, expos. And you know, again, first couple of years was just community building and agency. Community building and that type of thing. And then the back half of the decade, the last 5 years, we rolled out the agency. So like first 5 years, just events, community building, didn't really have a business model, constantly was in that space, and then realized I could do an agency. So for us, we, you know, if I were to build it backwards, if I went agency first and tried doing events, I don't know if I'd be as into the events, but I did it for so long that like it's second nature for me. So it just continues to be like a funnel for us. Cause it's like, well, that's how we started, was events, community building. So it's like really part of our company's DNA.
Yeah.
So it's like, we just do both now. And it's like, it's almost simultaneous now. Like we know how to like grab the value from the events and trickle it into the agency. So,
well, I mean, I think what's interesting, a lot of agencies, you know, they're always trying to do what you did the other way. Like, build community and events, and how do I get that lead gen? How do I get the thought leadership? And I have seen that the folks that start with something other than an agency and move to an agency because they're maybe model because they're pushed, like they see the opportunity, usually have a better like mix of how to get lead. Like the biggest problem with an agency is just lead gen. Like how do you do lead gen to get people in the door? And it seems like you cracked the nut. And that's a hard thing for startups too, right? For sure.
You know what's funny about it? Like, for example, whenever I pitch any prospect on like our agency side, what I literally do is I let them talk about their business and I, you know, ask qualifying questions, all that. But the way I start my side of it on any lead that comes in, whether it's a design project or a lead gen, doesn't matter. I start by, hey, you mind if I share my screen? Tell you more about Startup Boost and our Genesis story. And then I'll tell you about, you know, X or Y. It was like, sounds good. I literally share the screen. I put you three YouTube videos of our events, where it's like hundreds of people at the event. And then it's like, they look at me, they're like, whoa, like, that's so cool. Like, you have this whole community. So like, you know, well, now you just tell people, look, even if it doesn't work out on X service, like, come out to our next event, right?
Yeah.
And like, for example, I have this one lead this week. Like, I haven't talked to him in like a year. But we talked, he's going to probably move forward on some stuff. And he's like, you know, he's like, I really appreciate you because like, you've always been like, very like focused on the early stage and like, putting a lot of work to build the community and like, just all of the energy. So he's like, I'm glad now we found something we can work on. And like, for example, I'm going to send him my upcoming events. Like a touch base as we get into the contract. So like, it's interesting in that like, it's a reputation builder. Like if I had if I was an agency founder right now, if I really want to hack what I've done, you don't have to do the hundreds of events I've done to be quite honest. I'll give them like a hack here. It's like, even if you do like two events, we have like video content of it. Then you play that and say, hey, like here's like some events we've done and just like show you on the community, like being active and stuff. It just gets people's attention. It builds trust and rapport. And now it also instantly makes you an authority because like you're that guy or gal who host that event with 200 or 800 people or even 100 people, whatever. And it's just like, oh, cool. Like that's a cool factor, I guess. So it really helps us in terms of rapport building. Like we should not have those videos and not have that part of like the pitch. And people were kind of like still grasping, like, I should another agency. When we showed it to them, they're like, oh, cool. Maybe even if they're in like Florida, hey, next time I'm in the city, like I'll let you know. I just talked to someone right now, a lady this morning, she's in, was it Cali? She's like, oh, I might be out in Boston next month. I'll like coordinate with you and see if I can pop into an event. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think like you see a lot of SaaS companies, especially in the B2B space. One that comes to mind is Winter. I don't know if you've heard of Winter.
I haven't heard of that, no. What do they do?
They do message testing. They're a message testing platform. So okay. They'll have literal people in your ICP look at your website and give you comments on, oh, I hate this. This is stupid. Like they're A+. I've had Pep on the pod. I follow. He's like one of the best guys when it comes to messaging and testing. Very thoughtful guy. And, you know, they're a SaaS tool. You pay to do messaging testing. But they also do events. And there's actually one coming up in April. It's this huge marketing event there in Austin. But he's, you know, what is he doing? Like, he builds this community, builds the credibility. So if you ever need his service, it's there for you. He pushes what he does, but he doesn't push what he does because he's built this ecosystem around him where he's just got a huge amount of thought leadership and credibility. So if I ever need a message testing, like, he's always top of mind. In fact, every time I talk about storytelling, every time I've quoted him in some of my books, because this shit just nails it. Like this you know. And so a lot of companies, startups, build their product, then they build their community.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you've built your community and then started thinking about products. So how do you build thoughtful community? How do you start? Like, everyone I always talk to is like, oh, I'd love to build a community. I mean, I'm in a bunch of them and there, some of them are okay, some of them are great, but it sounds like you cracked a nut on that.
Yeah. So one is it, right? Like for me, that now I have like almost like strategies that I know will like fill up the room. But I'll tell you, like early on, there was events where like it was like 10% attendance of like what I was expecting. So like first couple of years, there were some rooms that were just like flat out embarrassing for me. I was like, oh my God, like I can't believe someone paid to sponsor this thing. Like I'm like sweating and stuff. You know what I mean? So like I've been through all that. And like, I'll tell you like a couple things. One is like, if you're going to do, there's a couple different types of events. One is like a mixture, obviously, right? You know, I'd say if you're early on building a community, you should use all of the different like free promotional platforms. Like right now we have like 30,000 on our newsletter. So I don't really put it out anywhere like Eventbrite or Meetup. I don't really need it, but early on that's all I did. So like, early on, I would like put it on Eventbrite, Meetup, all the stuff where people are searching can find it. Like locally in New York, like Gary's Guide. I don't know if that's in like other cities, but Gary's Guide is a pretty big one. Built In is another one for startups. And like every time we did an event, we blast it everywhere. Another thing we did was like, we do a lot of free mixers early on to get emails. So early on, like I'd host a mixer in New York and if it like really picked up and like we got some good coverage on it, I get 1,000 emails. Not saying 1,000 to show up on a free event. It's usually like 20 to 30% attendance rate, but if I get 1,000 emails, now I can re-hit them on my newsletter all the time. So like that's the thing where like early on, we used to do a lot of, not only that, but also cross-promote with other communities early on. Again, we don't do this anymore, but back then we did. So like I'd reach out to all the different meetups where like mixers and startups and like, hey, look, if you guys promote our stuff, we'll promote yours to our newsletter. And like what would happen at one point was like our logo was like everywhere. Like all the other meetups in New York like had our logo on there. So like at a certain point, we were just bigger than a lot of them. So we'd be like, hey, look, we'll throw you in our newsletter, throw us in yours, and like put us as like a media partner on like your landing page. So like early on, it was a lot of like the public stuff. And then also like the cross promotion. Those were some like our keys. And then, you know, again, early on, there were some empty events. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it, but there's some events that were like standing room. People were like fighting to get into the place. And I'm like, okay, I need to understand the difference here. Like this is night and day. Like what am I doing differently? Right. So I'll give you a couple of them, at least from like our space. Like one is anything we ever did with an investor in the room, people showed up. Like, people want to be investors. So like these pitch events, it's like standing room only all the time. And like,
oh yeah. Yeah. Pitch events are awesome. We used to do some of those with when I used to work for a nonprofit and a professional athlete. Yeah. People love, especially if there's if there's an investor in the room, people are going to show up.
That's pretty, yes. Yes. If you could feature like, hey, we have A and B coming from whatever ABC Ventures and DEF Ventures, people get fired up about it. And look, on the flip side of that, that's also true about speakers. If you can get a really good speaker, right? So like, just okay, that there's pitch events is kind of one hack. Another one is if you're doing a panel, I've seen it go standing room only and like 5-10 people showed up, like literally. And I'm like, oh my God. And honestly, you have to have an interesting topic. Some people will try to do stuff that's like so technical. It's like, oh, the panel on SMS regulation, like, you know, I mean, it's hard to get a group to show up for that, right? But if it's like, I don't know, if I'm making something up, maybe at least hit a niche, like the future of food tech, something where like there's an audience of people who are like pretty sizable. Like, for example, we also sometimes do events. We have like this side organization we run on Meetup called NYC Sports Tech Meetup. Like, that's a sports tech one. That one gets packed anytime we do it because it's like sports tech. Like, it's a big audience of people, or even if you do like a fintech panel, like, and then also having good panelists. Like, if you have C-suite or VP of, that's one thing I'd say like is kind of a little underrated. Even if you're starting from zero, you can actually get some pretty big speakers if like you put together an event. Like, if you're doing like a food tech event, you might reach out to like the CEO of some like big, you know, food tech startup who's raised $20 million, who might actually either sit on the panel or send their VP of sales or something. So like, there is that where like, even if you're kind of starting up, you know, and if you want to be like real scrappy, like you should even, I used to like go to venues where like co-working spaces, because I know they want straws. I'm like, listen, I don't have a budget for a venue, but like I'll bring you 100 people and we can promote the hell out of your co-working space as a part of this and put you in our newsletter and stuff. Sound good? And like, yeah, let's do it, right? So there's ways like be scrappy and do it at literally like low to no cost. And, you know, I'm kind of further along, so I have a lot of nuances in the way I do things. So like, for example, I'll say back in the day, like we used to like make a couple thousand bucks off the pitch event because like we charge everybody. We charge like, I mean, the judges and pigs, like the investors, like we charge the startups, we charge the audience, and like we made money from them. And then after a while, I was like, you know what? I'd rather hire the quality of the startups by setting a parameter, being like, hey, you know, at least 500K raised, 10 plus employees or significant revenue, but it's free for you. And the way we did that was like, we then had the agency to supplement it. So I no longer had to depend on dollars from the events. So that's why now a lot of our events, even though we've grown, we've made them like free instead of like paid. We do a lot of paid stuff because for me, it's like, all right, fine, I can maybe make, I don't know, $3,000-$4,000 if I really sell the hell out of the room, right, and get a couple sponsors. Or I can just have one client for $5,000 a month for a 3-month deal. You know what I mean? So like for me, it made it something where I could open it up and democratize it even more and ensure the quality of the pitch event while also making sure that obviously I can sustain and spend time and build this community. So like these are little like things that you get deeper into it where like now we're talking nuances. And then kind of last half I'll say on like events is like ensuring that you drive value for putting in the time. It's a lot of work. Why you say an act like events don't take time? That's why a lot of people do one or two just like blog posts and then stop. It's work. I mean, you know, running the show, everything's time, energy, and all that. So yeah. So like, for example, panels. How do I guarantee a panel, like value on a panel? I'll give you an example. I just talked to someone an hour ago. They're a cybersecurity company. They might hire us to do an event. Like, all right, how do we guarantee that we're going to get value out of the event? I said, listen, if you guys want to guarantee the right people in the room, the growth hack there is if you do an all-day event on cybersecurity, we have 5 panelists throughout the day. Each panel has 5 panelists who we've handpicked. So what ends up happening, even if you have 200 people in the audience and it's like hit or miss on like a lead gen for the organization that's paying us to do it, they're guaranteed to get value because those 25 panelists throughout the day like are going to be there. They're going to be on a panel. You're going to be moderating. It's kind of leveling the playing field with the VP of or the C-suite at. And even ahead of the event, I was saying, look, you can even reach out and say, look, I just want to hop on a quick call to tell you a bit about like some of the questions I'm going to ask during the panel. These are VPs or big companies. By the way, I just want to tell you a bit more about what ABC Corp does beyond the event. Sounds good? And it's like, you know, they're not going to say no to that. They know they're going to see you in a week or two. And it's like, all right, fine. So like, these are little things like we've tweaked over time. Do like a lot of failure, like a lot of success as well. So anyway, long story short, there's like a deeper playbook from a high level. Like I'd say like have interesting events, right? Hustle to like make it essentially free for you to run it on your end. And, you know, early on, maybe try to track down some sponsors, kind of like, you know, make up for the time you're spending. And then finally, it's like find ways to kind of get like nuanced with it, depending on like what else your organization does. You mentioned your buddy, he sells software. So if you're a software play, maybe it's like, hey, and again, if you want to, I'll give you the last thing here, the Bumble growth hack, right?
Yeah.
Bumble, what they did was like, hey, we'll go to these sororities, sponsor the event, tell all the frats to download it. And so as the guys show up, they have to have the Bumble. And then what happens is once they graduate from University of Michigan or Rutgers or wherever, they then go move to San Francisco or New York. And like, they're talking about Bumble. So like, that's a way you can use events to like see off like a software side. Like there's all different ways to slice it, but I'd say like do some events, make sure you have the right agendas and things that are filling up the room. And then get creative on like how do you drive value to the room and how do you get value from the room, you know, and creating that for everybody. So,
yeah, it's super interesting because we were at my day job, like, wow.
Yeah.
A lot of our clients love events. They do these sort of like, you know, elaborate in Vegas, big thing, big community events to sort of get with their folks. I used to do a lot of them for my old firm and I just not into them that much,
Yeah.
But What's interesting is the value derived is astronomical. And it's exactly what you said, because people want to get educated. They want to get inspired. They're going to show up to a good event with a good speaker and good, you know, good, well done. And if you are a startup and you're trying to think about how to get better lead gen, et cetera, there's always the thought leadership and the content, but content's also events and trying to bring people together to add value. Even, you know, even a meetup, you know, or attending a meetup.
Yeah.
It's just so fascinating because I think that's overlooked a lot. I really do.
Yeah. What's that, something you just mentioned that's interesting is like you mentioned, hey, there could be like astronomical value. On the flip side of that, here's the other thing that people miss. I agree. Obviously, I've done a lot of business off of events, but what people don't realize with events also, it's like, you have to understand, you might host three events, right? And the first event, you got a lead. Oh, cool. Made some money, right? Everything worked out. The next event, you might get nothing. It's like any other marketing. That's what people don't understand about events. They want like a silver bullet. Like, oh, I did an event. I had to have 20 new leads and like, I'm crushing. No, I've done events where I've gotten nothing. I posted hundreds of people, literally 100 people, so I got not a single deal out of it, just for whatever reason. Wasn't the right people, just the energy was off, I don't know what was wrong, right? Maybe there wasn't good alignment, I didn't hustle hard enough. I got zero out of the event in terms of like return. Then another event where we got like four clients out of it, and it's like, whoa, like this is unbelievable. I've had other situations where like, you know, I met someone, they weren't really a lead for me, but then they referred someone 3 months later, and now all of a sudden that's an opportunity. So like, that's the one thing I'd say with events is like, any other marketing channel, you have to be consistent, like you with your pod, right? Like you are consistent. So that's why how you're able to derive value. I'm sure out of the hundreds of people you've interviewed, some have driven value and given you something in return, but the majority probably have done nothing in terms of like returning or reciprocating, to be quite honest, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's volume. You have to understand that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a statistics and volume and consistency. And I think, you know, I'm not a huge fan of performance marketing. I think it's sort of like a growth hack that's done. Honestly, yeah. I mean, yeah, you could run ads and whatever, but to me, table stakes for any business is solid marketing, brand building. However you think you need to do that, you just need to spend the money and you need to you figure out what works and then double down on whatever channel. If you don't do that consistently, you're done, because you cannot just like switch horses all the time. I mean, one of the best pieces of advice I got doing this pod was I'm on the Blue Wire Network, which is a huge sports podcasting thing. You know, Kevin Jones, the CEO, great guy, huge network of sports podcasts. And you're like, why are you on a sports podcast network? Well, I helped Kevin in the early days. I was his mentor for a little while. I'm an investor in Blue Wire, a little small investor, not huge, right?
Awesome.
But his advice was commit to one a week for a year. Do five before you publish anything. If you can't commit to once a week for a year without looking at numbers, without doing all that, then don't do it. And I'm like, but, and he's just like, are you in? Are you out? That was his only criteria. And he was right. I mean, you know, I think they're at like 200 pods now. Like, it's a huge, you know, just, you know, a great network. And so, consistency matters, man. Showing up and doing the work. And it's sometimes, to your point, zero could get more, but showing up consistently is what matters. And I think that's table stakes for anything. If you're not willing to do that, then you shouldn't get in the business.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's, you know, the concept of like luck is the residue of hard work, right? Like, you're not going to get lucky if you don't bust your tail to get into those situations. And even then, you might not get lucky, but, you know, to have a chance to something to happen, it's like you got to show up and be consistent and everything else. So definitely, and I think anyone, especially who's like maybe like a younger entrepreneur who's like listening to this or watching it, it's like you gotta have that mindset of the kind of analogy I always think in the back of my mind is like, you know, like a nuke goes off, you gotta be like that cockroach, right? You gotta like kind of go on the ground and just like resurface and be like, all right, I'm ready to roll again. Like, it's just, you're gonna get hit, like things are gonna happen, and like that consistency I think is a good kind of defense against it though, because, you know, things are rolling, things are going well, maybe that extra effort you gave doing the podcast this week got you that extra lead. Or even if things are going shitty, maybe it's just like an uplift for you because you spoke to someone, you feel good about things again and your energy's up. Like, that consistency can also like be as like a defense against like things going left, or, you know what I mean?
So yeah. Oh, no, for sure. Like, you're, you know, and what's interesting that a lot of startups that I've been involved with, and I've learned this lesson the hard way, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, great product, great tech, no problem to solve, no good marketing, no good sales. You know, I'm not a sales person. Like, my disposition is more marketing, strategy, and development. Like, you know, I can build shit, I know how to build shit. And over time, I've learned that one of the most important skills for all entrepreneurs is to actually learn how to sell. But you don't have to be perfect at it. You don't have to be like the, Glenn Ross guy, right? You have to be copies for closers. But the first people who sell in a startup are the founders.
Yeah.
If the founders can't sell the thing, no magic SDR, no magic chief revenue officer.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, because you're the one that knows the most about it. You need to sell it so you can teach people to sell it. And
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like the game changer to me. I think products democratized, right? I could build anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best story wins on this stuff. And part of that best story winning is, how do I talk about it? How do I sell it? How do I get people to give a shit?
And that actually goes back to kind of the macro here. It's like the consistency, right? Because what happens is, especially early on in any new product you're selling, you're going to be bad. You're going to be bad. Like, whoever, you're going to be horrible in the first couple of calls. It is what it is. But like, you need those experiences to, one, build your confidence. That's one thing. And realize that, like, whatever you're scared about, there's nothing really to be scared about. You're just psyching yourself out. That's like one hurdle, right? Second, it's like understanding what's around the corner. Because I'll tell you from experience, there's 5 or 10 objections to any sale. It's not 1,000. So once you've heard it enough times, you almost build it into your pitch, where it's like you pitch it in a way that's already addressed 90% of the concern ahead of time. And like, it got to the point like where someone's like, you're like, hey, so with all that being said, any like specific questions you have, if it gets to the point where like you feel like you know all the objections, you put them out there already, most times they'll be like, no, it's pretty straightforward. Like, what's pricing look like? You know what I mean? But that takes time. Like, you're not going to be able to do it on the first call. You're just not. So that's a whole other thing. It's like with sales, it's like you have to be willing to put in the work and kind of like cut your teeth and like build out the nerves, because it's like anything else, you know, you work a muscle, it gets bigger. Like, sales is the same deal, right? You on your first call, sales call versus your 1,000th, or you on your first podcast versus your 200th, it's like different beast. You know what I mean?
It's night and day.
It's
like writing's the same way. Like, my first book, what a piece of junk. Mm. You know, now I'm on my...
But you needed that one to understand like table stakes, right? Like,
well, and I think one thing that we don't do great of in entrepreneurship and business is the idea of practice.
Mm.
Like, if you're into sports, right? You know, I do jiu-jitsu, right? So jiu-jitsu, like our competition, like I get into a competition, like the round, the fight is 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
I've trained years for that five minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and
champions are made when no one's looking. Yeah.
Well, exactly. And like, just look at sport. I mean, I think the best analogies, sports analogies are the best for sales that I've ever seen, because sales is about that drive to win.
It's a combat sport.
But also the practice, like it's you get a lot of at bats and you strike out a lot.
Yeah.
And you just got to be okay with that. And you got to be like, okay, you have to have the discipline to keep going.
Yeah.
That is just amazing to me. I mean, I'm always impressed by good salespeople. Like,
you know, it's funny. Like, even for me, like I'm now just the last like year or so been like creating more processes and delegating. Like, even this week, like, we're setting up our Asana, where like my team's like helping me to like delegate better and all that. So I'm starting to get to that point in the business. But like, even till today, like the last 2 days, today's Wednesday, yesterday and today, I've probably been on 20 calls, and like 70% are probably sales calls. And like, I have SDRs do the first call and that and prospect and ensure their quality. So I'm not on every call, but more of like the closing calls. So like, I almost think I always feel like at a certain point, founders need to, like, I need to eventually move on something else beyond sales at some point. But I kind of like the idea of like, you know, you have like one of these like armies, right? And like, there's the general could be like in the back of the like army, like in their office or whatever, kind of pushing around pawns, like where, who goes where. Regulate that general, like in the front, like on your horse with like your sword, and you're like, well, let's go. You know what I mean? And I feel like at a certain point, you do have to bring on a CRO and all these things. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like people try to be that general, like in the office, kind of strategizing too early on a lot of startups. And it's because a lot of reasons we talked about, we're making it sound simple to be able to kind of cut your teeth and, you know, get through the nerves. Like, a lot of people don't get past that stage. That's just the reality of it. So you can get there.
Because it's hard.
Yeah, it's not easy. Yeah.
Well, and it's the discipline. I mean, just imagine you're a tech founder, right? Yeah. Your technical prowess is unmatched. You're like a genius. Yeah. Like, you went to whatever Ivy, whatever tech school. You could literally build anything.
like, doesn't even matter. You could bend space
can be there.
Time.
Yeah.
And then someone, you're like, well, sell me it. And you're like, you have no clue because that is so outside your comfort zone. And more importantly,
you're talking code. They can't relate to it. They don't know what's going on.
You're going to fail so much and you're not used to failure. That's not going to be good. I mean, that's the reason why sports analogies and sports in general, I think, are good for anyone to play because sometimes it's your day. Sometimes it's not. Like this morning, you know, rolled a bunch of times, got caught in a choke, had to tap. Didn't want to tap, but I'm like,
hey, listen, either you succeed or you learn. You don't fail. But if you keep doing the wrong thing over and over, if you get choked out, then you're failing. So you're not taking the lesson. Like, that's the key, right?
Yeah. And I think for sales, though, again, like for founders, if I was to take what you've talked about and all your experience and really just like boil it down for me personally, it's if you're going to generate a community and you're going to build events, right? Like, do it thoughtfully. Start out really like you got to hustle, and it's the ultimate. And then also learning the sales process and having to close your own deals. Like, literally learning that is the advice I wish I got 25 years.
You know, the other thing is also, like, if you eventually want to scale a business, for you to be able to create like the program or the assets or the scripts or whatever else, you need to be the one. Like, right now, like, I built a lot of our sales scripts and different things, and then I've sat there as like my sales reps were trained up and like joined the first couple of calls, and like if they miss something, I jump in and like answer and give it back to them until they're like, Jason, I don't need you anymore. So like, even things like that. But the point is, to your point, like, if you're not the one leading the sales at first, you can't build that collateral to eventually delegate. It's never going to get to that next step, period. If you're not experiencing it, then creating process, then delegating. I think a lot of people are kind of lazy. It's like, oh, let me just delegate. Let me hire a CRO and they're like, I don't know where to start. Yeah.
It doesn't work. I've done, like, from personal experience, I've done that. It doesn't work. And this is the thing I always tell. They're like, well, this should sell itself. I go, look, salespeople are lazy. And they're like, what do you mean salespeople are lazy? And I said, look, their job's to close deals, not to like figure out your stupid shit.
Yeah.
They're lazy in the sense that tell me what to sell, not happy figure it out.
It's so funny. Like, I had a call this morning. We have like a lady on our team, this lady Cam. She's super cool, super helpful. She does a lot of like, for example, if I need like our Asana, she's setting up our entire Asana. She's like doing a lot of operation stuff for us. And like, I've been so busy over the last week. Like, I've been so back to her on Slack and like, we got things going. I said, honestly, Cams, you're doing an amazing job. I'm honestly kind of like, jokingly, I said it, but I kind of meant that, like, I'm failing you as a CEO. I need to get back to you. And like, literally what we did today, we set a 1-hour meeting every day between now and the end of the next week. So I cannot like not get her what she needs to do her job. So like everything you're saying is absolutely accurate. And like, one last thing I'll say is like, now I should go into product a little bit, and not to plug my own thing that I'm working on, but it only because it comes back to this conversation. So beyond Startup Boost, I'm also working my own like software startup. And like, even right now, I'm trying to figure out product market fit. So what have I done? Literally the last week, I spoke to like a dozen different users. I emailed them. I was like, hey, look, if you, you know, do this, like ask 15 minutes, I'll literally do a full interview with you on like our outlet. I will give you free credits for the platform. I found 15 minutes because like, we're trying to figure out product market fit. It's almost like sales. Like, I'm getting on there. I'm being like, hey, look, how's your experience? I have a Google Doc. I have notes, certain questions. Then it's like, we have two potential trajectories on where we pursue product market fit. So I'm like, hey, here's two possible routes for the business, for the product moving forward. Do you like A or B? And overwhelmingly, I got like the first version, which is what I want to do anyway. So it's like that validation. So like, even for example, I'm talking to my investors on Monday. My report to them is like, listen, I talked to like a dozen people. They really want to go this route. This is like where like the best path forward is. And like, it's almost like, it's not sales, but I think to even make it even more like basic, not even just sales, it's you got to talk to people.
It's development. It's market, product market fit. It's actually product research. It's market. I mean,
But I think that at the heart of it's talking to people. That's how you get to product. That's how you get to sales. You have to talk to people. People are so in their shell that it's like you have to get out of your comfort zone. You have to if you're going to do a startup. Otherwise, you're going to keep guessing. You're going to keep throwing stuff at the wall and hope that it sticks. And guess what? Throwing stuff at the wall and tech and hoping it sticks costs a lot of money.
Is a lot of time and money wasted for sure. So Jason, man, appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Probably talk for another 20 minutes.
Yeah. This is just the intro, everybody.
Intro show. We'll do it again sometime. I always love having people back on.
And, absolutely.
You know,
and love what you're doing. And again, appreciate thank you for the time and having me. And looking forward to, continuing to engage with the community. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that. Take care, man.
You got it.
Okay. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it.
My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.